As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
This is Issues 2022. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Laurie Chandler, Education Manager, Child Advocacy Center of Sedgwick County. Welcome to Issues 2022. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
As just a little explanation, Laurie, what exactly is the Child Advocacy Center of Sedgwick County?
The Child Advocacy Center is a place that brings together law enforcement, social services, DCF, advocacy, and therapy in one facility to promote the safety, health, and emotional well-being of abused children and their caregivers, and determine how to best serve children who've been abused.
Okay, so you're the ideal person for April Child Abuse Prevention Month, at least for this purpose. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says at least 1 in 7 children have experienced child abuse or neglect in the past year in the United States. Now, this is likely an underestimate because many cases are unreported, I would presume. And in 2020, 1,750 children died of abuse and neglect in the United States. Do you have local statistics to share with us on this, Laurie?
I do have some. I can tell you that the State Child Death Review Board reported 362 child fatalities in 2019. Those are the most recent numbers available because once a year completes, they review all of the cases the following year and then produce the reports. That's the most recent child death fatality report that I have. And the manner of deaths are classified into several different categories. There's natural and intentional injuries. That includes things like car accidents, drownings, and fires. Then there's the homicide, and then child abuse homicides. Then, of course, suicide, and then some that are undetermined. There were 23 child homicides in 2019, and 8, or 38%, were the result of child abuse.
Oh, and those were statewide figures, right?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Sedgwick County or local numbers on that or not?
No, sorry, I don't have those.
Okay. Now, the CDC is defining child abuse as any act or series of acts of commission or omission by a parent, caregiver, or another person in custodial role that results in harm, potential for harm, or threat of harm to a child. That seems like a pretty broad definition to me, but we're obviously looking at more than only a documented physical injury, are we not?
Oh, exactly. There are many ways a child could be being abused that would not necessarily cause physical injury. For example, neglect or child sexual abuse may not have physical injuries.
Okay. And the CDC, it goes on to define those 4 types of child abuse. I'm going to let you kind of elaborate on each one. Tell me what you can about each one if you could. First of all, first on the list is physical abuse.
Right. Well, Kansas law defines several forms of child abuse, including physical abuse, sexual abuse, and which includes human trafficking, emotional abuse, physical neglect, medical neglect, I think lack of supervision, abandonment, educational neglect, and then substance-affected infants. Mm-hmm. And all those forms are defined in Kansas statute as reasons for investigation.
Physical abuse can be, I suppose, anything from beating to anything to clear up to, as you mentioned earlier, the homicide of a child, which is disturbing to everyone.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's correct.
Physical. What about sexual abuse? How widespread is that? What do you see in your experience?
Well, I think people are usually pretty shocked to see that. Like in Sedgwick County, for instance, we have approximately 60 professionals in law enforcement, DCF, and the Child Advocacy Center therapy and advocates, that this is the work they do every day, is working child sexual abuse cases in just Sedgwick County alone. So when you figure, 60 professionals that spend every day all day working those cases, that's a lot. So I think people are usually pretty surprised by how much sexual abuse that we see right here in Sedgwick County.
What are the ages on the victims there? Could it be as very, very young, even up to, what are the ages?
0 to 17 are the is the age group that we investigate. Sometimes through 18, through 17, so to up to 18. And we see every age group, really. We unfortunately sometimes see infants. Of course, those are difficult to investigate because a lot of times those children are nonverbal. But we do investigate any and all allegations in any age group.
How much is that tied in with human trafficking? Do you know?
Well, we investigate human trafficking cases as part of sexual abuse allegations at the Child Advocacy Center, because human trafficking is a form of child sexual abuse.
Sure, sure. Now, let's talk about emotional abuse. What exactly does that mean, Laurie?
Emotional abuse is when an action or omission has created an environment of fear or harm to a child. That could be anything from name calling to degrading a child, embarrassing a child. It could be children who witness abuse in the home, maybe domestic violence, those sort of things.
Well, and this is, it occurred to me, for you to rely on the child coming forth, they may not even be aware that they're being emotionally abused. So how are you going to track it? You got to have somebody else see it, huh?
Oh, exactly. That's one of the most frustrating things. A lot of children do not realize that what they're experiencing isn't normal. And so that's why a lot of times there's delayed disclosures with children who've been abused, because they don't even realize that they're being abused, and that it's not happening to everyone. So once they do realize that or know something isn't right, the hope is that then they'll reach out to someone that they can trust, a trusted adult, and disclose what has been occurring so that we can get some services and help in there for them.
Well, you say that neglect is a form of child abuse. Could you define that for me? What exactly is a neglect of a child?
Well, neglect can be a lot of different things, but it can be things like a home that is unsafe for the child to live in. It could be no food, lack of food, nutrition, lack of medical care, educational neglect. Maybe they're not getting to school like they should. Sometimes parents have like drug and alcohol issues or mental health issues, and they're unable to get the children to school, or they choose not to get the children to school. Mm-hmm. So all of those things can be neglect. There's a lot of different things that can fall under the category of neglect. It's a pretty broad category. In fact, when we break down the statistics, that's the largest category of cases that are screened in for investigation. Mm-hmm. They fall under the category of neglect.
Let's talk about, for just a second, if we may, the abuser, the person who abuses the child. Is there a definition that you have of who might most often be an abuser?
Yeah, the perpetrator is usually someone that the family knows and trusts. In fact, 90% in child sexual abuse cases, the victims know their abuser. So that's a large number. I know I grew up with like stranger danger, and I think that's still very important, but I think that we need to also be educating people about the fact that in 90% of the cases, the victims know their abuser. It is not a stranger. And regarding when we talk about child abuse homicides, about 49% of those deaths, the suspected perpetrator was a biological parent of the child. Hmm. And then with, I think it's mother's significant others was the suspected perpetrator in 27% of child abuse homicides.
That is the person who reports the news every day and has for many years. That's the one that gets to me when it's the boyfriend. It's somebody left their kid, they left him in charge of their child, and a tragedy occurs.
I know, right? Yeah. It always seems like that's the ones that we hear the most about.
Right, right. Hey, you're listening to Issues 2022 on the Advocacy. Excuse me. You're listening to Issues 22 on the Odyssey radio stations. About to take over your job there. Our guest is Lori Chandler, Education Manager, Child Advocacy Center of Sedgwick County, on this Child Abuse Prevention Month of April. Now, Lori, what are the long-term effects for the victims of child abuse?
Well, child maltreatment can be linked to later physical, psychological, and behavioral consequences, as well as costs to society as a whole. The consequences may be independent of each other, but they also may be interrelated. For example, abuse and neglect may stunt physical development of a child's brain and lead to psychological problems such as like low self-esteem, which can later lead to high-risk behaviors such as substance abuse. So the outcomes for each child may vary widely and are affected by a combination of factors, including the child's age and developmental status when the maltreatment occurred, the type, the frequency, duration, and severity of the maltreatment, and the relationship between the child and the perpetrator.
What's the impact on families, Lori?
Oh, it's immense. So when a family experiences, you know, abuse doesn't just affect the child. It does affect the entire family. And so when a family is faced with this sort of trauma, it affects all of them. And, for example, there could be financial issues that arise out of that. For example, maybe the alleged perpetrator has to be incarcerated or has to leave the home, and they may be the person who typically is paying the bills. So that could have a impact on the family's financial status, emotional well-being, just sort of that grief process that families have to go through, you know, when they've experienced something traumatic like abuse. They could have change in the household composition, kind of what I was saying before, maybe the perpetrator has to leave the home. They could have, of course, the physical injuries that could happen to the child could then have impacts for the family. There could be multiple appointments the family has to go to, just sort of a change in their routine. Kind of their everyday life may change for a while. And just kind of overcoming the emotional and psychological problems for the whole family can have a huge impact.
Now, how are abuse cases most often reported? They go up through the schools, medical facilities, police?
Yes, exactly. All three, yes.
All
yes,
of the
yes.
above, huh?
Yes, all of the above. The most common professional report sources are educational personnel, and that's at about 21%. Law enforcement personnel comes in just right below there, and then medical personnel and social service staff are the majority of the reports.
Well, you would think one of the signs would be something physical, like the child would show up with bruises or something like that. Are there other signs that a child is being abused that maybe are not quite so obvious?
Sure. Yeah, there are. I mean, like you said, there's the obvious, the bruises, welts, bite marks, burns, you know, fractures, you know, those sort of things. But then you also have things like sexually transmitted diseases or infections. You could have pelvic inflammatory disease. You could see behavioral problems. So maybe a child appears frightened of a parent or caregiver, or a child is disclosing the abuse. You could see runaway behaviors, sleep problems, including nightmares, or maybe the child has some regressive behaviors where they begin wetting the bed or their clothes, and they have already been potty trained. You can also see just changes. Overall changes in behavior is important to look for. So if a child is normally very outgoing and bubbly and rambunctious, and suddenly they're very quiet and isolating themselves, you know, any sudden change in behavior is a big indication that something needs to be looked into. And then just really, there's so many things. Every child is so different, and so it's more about knowing the child and knowing when you see something that isn't right for that child.
Right. Well, what should we do if we suspect that a child is being abused?
Report. reports of suspected child abuse and neglect should be made to the Kansas Report Center. And that number is 1-800-922-5330. Or people can also go online and make reports at dcf.ks.gov.
Now, if somebody would come back and say you go to investigate, it appears to me that there is a possibility that somebody could just do some harm to a person that may or may not be a perpetrator or a suspect. So there will be an investigation. I mean, not automatically you're going to go in and take a child out of a situation, right?
Right. No, that's so very true. And I think that's something that people don't understand is how that system works. And we do training that explains more about what happens after an investigation is made at our Child Advocacy Center. So, but when a report is made, it goes through a screening process, and it to determine whether or not the allegations that are reported meet the statutory definitions that we kind of talked about earlier, mm-hmm. To be investigated for abuse and neglect. If they do meet those definitions, then the case is screened in for investigation and assigned to a social worker, and then, or an investigator, and then they begin that investigative process. The idea is to find the facts, to figure out what exactly is going on in a very child-friendly way, and to best serve the family and keep families together whenever possible.
Should we ever consider direct, immediate intervention? In other words, taking the matters into our own hands on something like this?
No, I would not recommend that. Okay. You know, we of course should be looking for signs of stress and poor parenting skills, social isolation. We should be looking for those kind of things with families and then offering them support. So I think we could have immediate intervention in that way. But if we have concerns, if you have concerns that a child is being abused or neglected immediately, or you see that they're being abused, it's obvious that someone does something in front of you, for instance, then we would recommend that they call 911.
What treatment and care facilities are available to victims? Shelters. Let's talk about shelters for a minute. What's available?
Well, for children, we have the Wichita Children's Home. So, and then we have a variety of different, foster homes and other options for children. But there's many great programs that serve victims and their caregivers that aren't facilities necessarily, but can provide great treatment services, including the Child Advocacy Center, Kansas Children's Service League, ComCare, Mental Health Association, the PANDO Initiative, ICTSOS. And then there's also 1-800-CHILDREN, which provides 24/7 judgment-free parenting support through a call line and resource directory.
Is it possible for abusers to be rehabilitated and to stop doing this kind of behavior?
Well, there's always hope. We do hope that with effective and intensive treatment programs, rehabilitation is possible.
What impact did, I ask this every week on this interview segment, what impact did the COVID pandemic have on reported cases of child abuse, if any? I understand it has had an impact.
It did have an impact. The Department for Children and Families saw a decrease in abuse and neglect reports during the pandemic, most likely due to the fact that children had less contact with adults outside the home. So, however, although they did see that decrease in abuse and neglect reporting, there was an increase reported by law enforcement in online solicitation cases, probably due to the increase in all the activity online, right? Because we all suddenly were thrust into this virtual world, including our children, because they were learning online, and perpetrators knew that, and so they were using that time and access to gain access to the children.
You know, I know there are just a number of police and police officers, educators, social workers, folks like yourself who are involved in trying to protect their kids and keep them safe. What motivates them? What motivates you? What gets you going to do this kind of work?
Saving the children, right? It's all about that. You know, if we can help one child, you know, we've made a huge difference, because the ripples from the effects of abuse on one child are enormous. Like we talked about before, it's not only the child who's affected, it's the family and then eventually society that's affected. And so really, the passion comes from just wanting to make a difference in the world, and we can do that one child at a time.
Everybody who hears stories like this or about child abuse, I think, is affected negatively. It concerns all of us. But are there success stories as well? In other words, are there some stories that have a happy ending when it comes to child abuse?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, I think that a lot of the cases do. You know, there's some great services out there. There's some hard workers that are really trying to provide the best for families and their children. And, you know, we know through research and data that if we're going to help children, we have to help their families and the people that are taking care of them, right? And so, I think that, we just got to keep doing the work every day and putting one step in front of the other and getting out there and trying to make a difference. Like I said, one child can make a huge difference.
Well, obviously, Sedgwick County is involved in this, in funding programs and services and employees, the police department. There are a lot of government agencies involved, but you're also working, as I understand it, with private industry and private organizations as well.
Yes, we are. We collaborate with many, many different organizations in the community.
All right. Well, again, every time we hear about child abuse, it seems to... It gets our attention, and we wish you luck and the best with you and the other folks who are working with this problem, that maybe someday you can work yourself out of a job. What do you think?
That would be amazing.
let me ask you.
Would be amazing.
I've got time. Let me ask you one more question. I like to ask this. Where are you from, Lori?
I'm from Wichita, Kansas.
You're Wichita, Kansas. And what actually motivated you? Did you ever think when you were growing up that I'm going to work with children, or is it something that motivated you, some revelation or something?
No, actually, this is not a great story, but it was just an accident. But in college, I just was taking a lot of courses surrounding advocacy on many different levels. And when I was assigned to my practicum, it was with children, and I thought, oh, no, I don't know about this. And I was assigned to the Exploited Missing Child Unit. And I immediately knew that that's where I needed to be. I had no idea that these things were happening in our community. I did not come from that background. And when I saw what was going on, I knew I had to get involved and do something.
All right. Well, Lori, again, thank you for being with us. We appreciate the work that you do, and best of luck to you. Okay?
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate the time.
Our guest is Lori Chandler, Education Manager, Child Advocacy Center of Sedgwick County. Again, this is April is Child Abuse Prevention Month across the nation. And that's all for this edition of Issues 2022. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.